What's up, everyone? Mike Cirelli here with the Men's Journal Everyday Warrior. I've got Adam Andrzejewski. Now, I look at your name. That's not how I would pronounce that. I was given that way of pronouncing it. I mean, people will see the spelling, but...
Well, you nailed it, Mike. You did an excellent job. It's not easy being an Andrzejewski.
No, it's not. I can tell. Do people call you Ski for short?
Over the years.
Over the years. We do that for everyone in the military. If they have some sort of Ski at the end of their name, they're Ski, whether they like it or not.
Typically, people screw up the first name. So you did well on both accounts. They focus so much on that last name, they actually call me, they don't call me Adam, they call me Andrew, or all kinds of different machinations of it.
Well, I'm glad you joined us. And the topic is relevant as we're in an election year with regards to what you do. And for the audience, Adam started OpenTheBooks.com, which highlights, I know you were used the word transparency. I've started to dislike the word transparency. It's almost like you are enforcing accountability for how the taxpayers' dollars are being spent. In sort of educate me here, was there anything like this for the public to get insight right down to the pennies, what's being spent on what?
We're actually pioneering it. Nothing exists like this. For the first time in American history, we've posted nearly every dime online in real time of government spending. So, Mike, we have prosecuted over the course of the past 5 years 250,000 Freedom of Information Act requests. Last year alone, we did 55,000, and we've captured nearly every dime taxed and spent at every level. I'm talking federal, state, and local level spending across the country. It's comprised of 25 million public employee salaries, all federal checkbook spending all the way back to the year 2001, 50 state checkbooks, and checkbook vendor spending in 17,000 units of local government across the country. So for the first time in history, we've unsiloed nearly all government spending, and you can follow the money to hold the political class accountable for tax and spend decisions.
I've got to assume the IRS has a bullseye on you. Have you been audited?
We've actually audited the IRS from the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal. And I thought for sure. So this was back in 2016. The former legendary U.S. Senator, Dr. Tom Coburn, he retires from the Senate. And we co-authored this piece on our investigation. Many people still remember this piece. Why does the IRS need guns? We had quantified that the IRS owned about 4,000 guns, including submachine guns. Coburn and I authored this piece for the Wall Street Journal. Before we did, we reached out to the IRS for comment. We wanted to know quite simply if they had an accounting of their gun locker, an asset inventory sheet. You see, when the IRS, if they audit us, you or I, the first thing they're going to ask for is an asset inventory sheet. So we wanted to know if they had the asset inventory sheet on their guns, ammunition, and military-style equipment. And it turns out they didn't. And so actually, we audited the IRS. We published that at the Wall Street Journal. Many people still remember that piece.
Practice what you preach is basically what you were enforcing there. And I love that.
And fast forward to today, the IRS since 2006 has spent $35.2 million on guns, ammunition, and military-style equipment. So if you've heard that the IRS is militarized or the federal agencies are militarized, 100% that's our oversight work at OpenTheBooks.com. For example, there are now more federal officers than there are United States Marines. There are over 200,000 federal officers with arrest and firearm authority, and there's approximately 180,000 U.S. Marines. There are 27 traditional federal law enforcement agencies purchasing weaponry, but there are 76 rank and file traditional paper pushing agencies buying weaponry, including not only the IRS, but things like Social Security Administration or Health and Human Services or the Department of Education or the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. So at OpenTheBooks.com, we've quantified all of that.
I'm sorry, did you say the Department of Education?
Yes. Yeah, you better pay your student loans, Michael.
Interesting. Well, that's Biden's taking care of that.
That's true.
What a bad precedent. I heard or I saw a lot of responses when he's basically forgiving all these student loans that people are like, then I'm just not going to pay my mortgage. I'm not going to pay my credit cards.
It is a bad precedent. But in continuing with the militarization of the federal agencies, many people, they don't understand why. For instance, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has about 200 special agents armed with the latest in guns, ammunition, and military-style equipment. So in the last, this is part of the impact of OpenTheBooks.com. 27 times last year, our investigations came in front of Congress. It was 10 speeches, floor speeches, that cited our work. It was 10 oversight letters from a member to a federal agency. And it was 7 amendments that came before Congress based on our oversight work for a vote. And we went 5-2. And one of the amendments that we won was stripping, was the vote to strip the EPA special agent of arrest and firearm authority and the ability to purchase guns, ammunition, and military-style equipment. That passed the House, but it was not included in this latest, last week, the omnibus spending bill, where they put everything together in one bill. They actually left that out.
You know, having served 20 years in government, albeit the military, I love my service, love my country, total distrust for the government. And I think as you get more senior in the military, you're exposed to more of the corrupt nature of some of our leaders. We had a common phrase, lions led by dogs. I served with a lot of lions, ultimately, that were led by dogs within the National Capital Region. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. It's poor leadership across the board. Would you say your trust in the government has degraded? I don't know where your level of trust in the government is, but how do you sort of answer that question?
Well, Mike, I'm from Illinois. It is the Super Bowl of corruption. So if anything happens on public policy and politics in my state, if anything happens for the good of the people, it's entirely by accident. Okay, so we're green eye shaded, we're cynical, but I'm still optimistic about our future in this country. Because as bad as things are, we're the best there is, we're the best there ever was in the last 5,000 years of human history. We've been given the greatest of gifts, and that's a recognition right from our founding documents that our rights, they come from God, they don't come from government. You and I have instituted this government to secure our rights. And this is where transparency plays a big role. Our founders knew that knowledge was power, and they actually wrote transparency into Article 1, Section 9, Clause 7, the powerful appropriations clause in the United States Constitution. And it says that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. Now, today it's the internet age, and we think there's a clear interpretation. Post every dime online in real time, open the books, and that's our mission.
It's a beautiful mission. It's necessary. I think for me is, tax code is confusing. I'm trying to think of the politician that had the 999 plan. You remember him?
Yeah, he passed.
He passed. He recently passed. But Right. Just to simplify tax code so that it is just for small businesses, then your personal side, it's aggravating.
Well, it is aggravating.
To deal with, but I don't have a problem paying taxes. What I have a problem with, and I think a lot of Americans would agree, is how our money is being spent. And Will, if you could throw up openthebooks.com, even looking at your webpage, if you go down, this UVA's highest paid DE&I staff, and the top individual right there, Martin N. Davidson, makes $451,000. For DE&I. And of course, he's a associate dean. I get that. But he's the global chief diversity officer. Overall, you can see right there, it says Virginia spends $20 million on 235 DE&I employees. Do you think that the taxpayers of Virginia are well aware of that?
Well, they didn't know it until our report just a couple of days ago. And this report came on the heels of the University of Florida last Friday. They canceled their DEI program, because under Florida law now, you cannot spend taxpayer money on diversity, equity, and inclusion programming within higher ed. And so 28 staffers lost their job, and it was $5 million at the University of Florida. Well, we at OpenTheBooks.com, we follow the national news cycle with the data that we've captured, and we were holding the payroll data of the flagship university in Virginia, the University of Virginia, founded by Thomas Jefferson, author of the Declaration of Independence. All men are created equal. As a tenet of DEI, it's equal outcomes, it's equity, not equality of opportunity. It's the antithesis, it's the opposite of Jeffersonian principles. So we wanted to see how deeply embedded this philosophy had been embraced by the flagship university. And we didn't find 28 staffers like down in Florida. We found 235. It wasn't $5 million. It was $20 million of payroll. And this made national news. And it was tweeted by Elon Musk. And I'm very happy to talk about it here today with you, Mike.
So that was just the University of Virginia alone?
That's it. At Charlottesville.
I'll tell you what. I had a short stint right when I retired out of the SEAL teams. I actually got picked up by John Sharp as the chancellor at the university, or Texas A&M University. And so I went to the system level. It was a good paying job. And within 3 days on the job, I called my then fiance and said 6 months.
Wow.
6 months. Higher education was, it was a fiefdom. And I could tell I was stepping right back into a system that was worse than the military. And I said, hey, I'm going into the private sector.
Well, there's this concept. Michael Barone, 20 years ago, wrote the book Hard America, Soft America. And soft America is the educational institutions. So when you graduate from high school in America, you're ranked like 26th or 27th in the world on education. That's where our scores rank when you graduate from our expensive K-12 schools. But by the time you're 30 years old, you're the number one most productive worker in the world. That's because in our capitalistic system, it hones individuals. It brings out their talent. And by the time you're 30 years old, all of a sudden, you haven't been coddled. The competition makes you number one.
You rise to the top, or you don't. But you know, when people are so quick to criticize capitalism, it's a lack of perspective for what it's given our nation and what we've been able to do internationally. Even you look at World War II, when we became the largest industrialized nation to turn out the equipment necessary to fight a war on two fronts and win. And that was a monumental time in human history in terms of production of what we did to fight those wars.
Yeah, it was incredible. My grandfather, my mother's father, got the Bronze Star on the tank crew during World War II. He was, he went like 76 days without a break in heavy combat. It's just a phenomenal story. In my then column at Forbes, I wrote about it, about how on that tank crew, his commander, who saved his life, those set of decisions led to 76 descendants to this day.
That's insane.
Yep.
76. Well, you guys are definitely populating this nation. No one's ever going to accuse you of that.
My mother was one of 10 kids. Well, I was one of seven. And then there's out of my family, I have five sisters, one brother. There are 26 grandchildren.
How did you get into this? I mean, it's blue ocean strategy. There's nothing out there, as you just stated. What gave you the idea to create OpenTheBooks.com?
So I had an exit from private business with my brother in 2008, and I did a little bit better in life than I thought. So I looked around. So I dedicated my life to public service, and I looked for an idea that would make a real impact. And I saw what U.S. Senator Dr. Tom Coburn out of Oklahoma, a small state U.S. senator, he had partnered with then-Illinois Senator Barack Obama in 2006. They came up with this legislation that opened the federal checkbook for the first time ever, called the Google Your Government Act. And I thought, wow, if we could see it all in as real time as possible, then bad actors would start to self-censor, and people could hold the political class accountable for their decisions. And so by 2011, I had partnered with our current chief operating officer, Craig Majerus, and we put every single public employee and retiree at every level of Illinois government in September of 2011 online for the first time in history. And immediately we found citizens that used our data found corruption. There was a school treasurer. He made $296,000, and the previous year he made $154,000, and they knew that wasn't right. But this was in Cook County. That's the county of Chicago. And the prosecutor in Cook County, she can't find public corruption anywhere. But eventually he was indicted, he served time in the penitentiary, and he had to pay restitution. And that's when we realized what we had. So we first did Illinois. I'm an entrepreneur. We built it scalable, so we've done the whole country.
What were the initial outcomes, or sort of your desired end state with Open the Books?
Yeah, I mean, I can just like last year. So in a nutshell, we want to empower regular people where they live with the means to hold their political class accountable. And so that's why, like, no matter where you live across the country, if you want to find the salary of the of your daughter's fifth grade math teacher, it's on our website and you can search all of it for free. If your neighbor has a farm and you want to see how much they're soaking up in terms of federal farm subsidy, you can come to our website. You can get that answer. If you want to research White House payrolls, you can get that answer. No matter what it is, you can come to our website and you can follow the money for the first time in history. We've opened the books nearly at every level.
What are some of the, give me an example of the work you guys have done and what it's sort of led to in terms of either, you know, indictments.
Yeah. Right. So when I years ago, when I investigated my local junior college, we found that the chief radio station engineer had opened up a private business, had traded with himself to the tune of about $500,000 a year. We drove that story to the Chicago Tribune. He was eventually indicted. He was sentenced to 8 years in jail, and he had to pay restitution of $400,000, and he lost his public pension. And that's the power of transparency.
Good Lord. So is it almost, you said self-regulate. People are now fearful of if we don't do the right things, it's going to come out and open the books.
Well, look, we need a million eyes on our data. So we have pioneered, we're breaking it right now, right here on the podcast, Benjamin the chatbot. You know, when Dr. Franklin leaves the Constitutional Convention back in the day, he's asked by a constituent, what do we have here? And he says, we have a republic if you can keep it. So against all this spending, by answering three easy questions on our chatbot, it will deliver the answer to your question to your email box. And this is just a simple innovation that answers the burning question since 1789, what the heck is my government up to? And we, for the first time ever, are able to answer that question at every level all across the country.
I've got to assume, as you get into the intelligence community, is that a little more, let's say, less transparent, like the CIA? Are there programs covered under different buckets that people don't have sort of eyes into?
That's right. And there's legitimate national security shields in place on certain data. Yeah. You know, we understand that. But at the Pentagon, we've run into a war on transparency within their K-12 public schools, for example. So there's about 70,000 children of service members that are educated at the Pentagon's K-12 schools. It's called the Department of Defense Education Activity Agency. And so we filed a simple request for their payrolls, and it was denied. And we won on appeal, and we still don't have the production. We filed a simple request for their vendor checkbooks. And it was denied, and we appealed, and we still don't have the production. Now, there are 13,000 school districts across the country. We have the payrolls of virtually every single one of them. And in 4,000 out of the 13,000 public schools, we have their vendor checkbooks. So what's going on at the Pentagon's K-12 public schools where they cannot produce basic information on their schools?
Well, remind me, you may know the specific number. I think it was last year the DOD came out, Department of Defense, and said, oh, we had an accounting error of $658 million, I believe is the ballpark. That's a pretty big rounding error.
It is. And, you know, the Department of Defense, it is the federal agency that has never passed their audit. And they flunked like six or seven of them in a row, and it's not even getting better. This summer, we're going to come out with an oversight report on the Department of Defense, all the missing assets, all of their accounting controls that don't exist. We're going to do a full, complete audit on the Department of Defense.
What, how big of a staff do you have to do this?
We punch above our weight, Mike. So we have about 35 full-time equivalents employed, and 27 of them file 55,000 Freedom of Information Act requests every single year. And what they do with that, we've coded an electronic platform. They file their requests. They follow up with their requests. They accept the production. They break it open. They map it to our website, to our mobile app, and to other platforms that we have to display the spending. And then I run a team, because not only do we open the books, obviously, we audit the books. The audits make national news. So I run the audit team. And I have three journalists plus myself. And then we have, you know, we've got a director of communications. We've got a director mm-hmm. of development, fundraising, things like that. So three journalists, myself, last year, we published 700 investigations. I personally did 600 live TV and radio interviews. We got 14,000 media mentions, in addition to filing 55,000 requests and capturing nearly every dime text and spent. I'm really proud of the work ethic of our team.
Those are some amazing numbers. Amazing. What is the traffic to your website look like?
When Google changed their traffic numbers, I've kind of lost track of it. We get about 150 to 200,000 people a month to come to openthebooks.com. When we release an investigation, we don't release it on our website. We use the established media channels that get flow to release our investigations. So, for example, just this week, we were mentioned on the editorial page of the New York Post, the third largest newspaper in the country. We broke a story with the Washington Examiner. We put up a piece on our own Substack. That investigation on the University of Virginia was tweeted by Elon Musk and also made a congressional hearing in the Education and Workforce Committee in the U.S. House. So we're able, it also made Daily Mail, a big expose. Nearly every single radio station in Virginia covered it. So we're able to drive these news stories into the national consciousness. So many people listening to the podcast here today, they won't necessarily know the name openthebooks.com or certainly my name, which is very difficult, Andrzejewski, but they'll know our investigations. So for example, we'll do a little one-on-one plebiscite, a little poll. During the pandemic, who was the federal bureaucrat that out-earned everybody else?
Why am I blanking on his name?
The good doctor.
The good doctor.
Dr. Anthony Fauci.
Highest paid.
So we broke that story. And many people, you know, wondered and had a lot of questions as to how Fauci, who ran a sub-agency of a sub-agency of Health and Human Services, could out-earn everybody. And it took us four federal lawsuits against the National Institutes of Health, Fauci's employer, to get the answer. We were represented by the public interest law firm in Washington, D.C., Judicial Watch. And we won every single one of those lawsuits, and we unearthed a memo from 2004. Fauci got a permanent pay adjustment. Think of it as a permanent bonus because he was tip of the spear on biodefense. In other words, Fauci was the number one most highly compensated federal employee specifically to prevent the next pandemic. And obviously he failed. Mm.
How many politicians are reaching out to you for assistance?
We've got good relationships, excuse me, especially in Congress. Mm-hmm. For instance, if you remember Dr. Rand Paul, the U.S. Senator from Kentucky.
Yes.
He asked Fauci two summers ago in the hot seat mm-hmm. on this concept of third-party royalties. Many people during the pandemic had felt that big government was very close to big pharma. And at openthebooks.com, we knew in the federal checkbook that the National Institutes of Health every year doles out 56,000 grants for about $32 billion worth of grant making, which basically buys you friends across the entire healthcare complex, basically buys you the entire United States healthcare complex. All the research, all the discoveries, all the pharmaceutical companies, everybody is dialed into your grant making. On the other side, we identified this database of third-party paid royalties where the industry, think pharmaceutical company, would license an NIH invention, mm-hmm. an invention invented in a taxpayer-paid lab by a taxpayer-paid scientist, then it's licensed to the private sector who pays royalties back to the scientist and back to the agency. And we wanted it, so every single one of those licenses, every single one of those payments is a potential conflict of interest. And the last time this database had sunshine on it was 2005. So we wanted to see a copy of it. And again, we had to file two federal lawsuits on this. And in a 12-year period, we were able to quantify $325 million was paid from the agency, from the pharmaceutical industry to the agency and 2,400 of its scientists, including its leaders of Fauci and Collins. But they would not disclose the payments to the individual scientists. So again, last week, on a 12-0 vote in the United States Senate, U.S. Senator Rand Paul is running the legislation to open up that database. It passed out of committee on a bipartisan vote, and we're very proud of this impact as well.
That, again, kudos to you. You must have a pretty large legal team then, I'm assuming.
Well, thanks to Judicial Watch, we punch above our weight.
You've paired with them.
Exactly. Partner. Right.
Okay. All right. You know, people look at this and government spending is out of control. That's a captain obvious statement, as we say. We've got a deficit that's out of control. In your opinion, as a business leader, can we reverse that? Is open the books going to play a part in getting government to run this country? Again, you're a businessman with an exit, like a business, spending cash you don't have.
Yes, and we've outlined a 3-point plan that any executive, including the President of the United States, a county executive, a city mayor, anybody in an executive position for government can execute this 3-point plan. Here's the first prong. Open the books. Open the books on everything. All the payrolls, all the checkbooks, all your public employee benefit buckets, you know, all the accumulated sick time, you know, anything where there's taxpayer liability, open the books. Here's the second point. Audit. Forensic audit. Follow the money. Deep evidentiary. Follow the money. Carve out all the waste. And look, there's a lot of waste. Like at the federal level, you know, there was $1.2 million from Health and Human Services that funded sex education for California prostitutes who could have probably taught the class. You got $1 million federal grant that went to Cornell University, an Ivy League university with a massive fat endowment for a study where it hurts the most to be stung by a bee. So there is a ton of waste everywhere in government spending. Cut the waste. Third prong, communicate with your constituents. You know, the old fireside chat, but now you have YouTube. You know, we encouraged, back when Trump was president, we encouraged him to use Twitter. He seemed to be very good at communicating the message on the electronic platform. And look, we had a lot of success. So in the president's budget to Congress in 2021, we were actually mentioned twice. A half page in that budget tied to our findings, hyperlinked to our website, and was used as an argument to cut the National Endowment of the Arts, National Endowment of the Humanities, and use it or lose it spending. Use it or lose it spending is when federal agencies spend down their budget this year to get the same or more money from Congress next year. And so we were used both times in that budget. The president was embracing the transparency revolution. But 2 weeks after that budget debuted, that budget came out in February of 2020. And by March of 2020, we all know what happened. And that budget was thrown out the window as the pandemic started. Mm.
For the listeners, and please chime in, again, if it almost defies logic. If in the military I'm given a budget of $1 million, but I use that money effectively to meet the same objectives and only spend $800, the sort of fear that's put into us is, well, you got to hurry up and spend the other $200,000, or they'll cut your budget from $1 million this year to $800,000 next year.
Yeah.
And in the business world, you'd be commended for that. They probably wouldn't cut your budget. They'd probably increase it.
So we've made this use it or lose it budgeting a big issue on a national basis. So right ahead of the pandemic, there was in the House on the top military committee headed up by Adam Smith, the Democrat from California. Yes. He was the chairman of it. And he had three generals testifying. And one of the generals, and we have this on YouTube at openthebooks.com, one of the generals looks at the other two and says, we've got to stop end of year spending sprees, this use it or lose it. He says, you know I'm right. We are going to burn in hell. That's his exact quote. And Adam Smith, the chairman of that committee, tabled the resolution that would have stopped the Pentagon's use it or lose it spending. He said, we'll bring it up next year. Well, next year was the pandemic year, and obviously it wasn't even considered.
What is it with government that they think they have just total authority to spend money on these programs? Where does it hurt most to be stung by a bee? These programs that are just, again, if most Americans understood where this money was going, you'd have riots in the streets.
You would. And here's another example of use it or lose it spending, this time during the pandemic. So we noticed that the federal agencies never stopped purchasing furniture during the pandemic years.
In which people can't come to work.
They were working from home. They weren't even in the office. So starting in 2017, which is the year we looked back to, it was about $1 billion a year. And that number continued all the way through the entire pandemic. And then we took a look at the detail. And some of these things were just outrageous. Like you had the Centers for Disease Control. They spent $250,000 purchasing solar-powered picnic tables. We didn't even know a solar-powered picnic table existed in this world. It turns out they cost between $8,000 and $12,000 a table. We found that the State Department purchased $120,000 for the embassy in Islamabad of high-end Ethan Allen leather recliners. Now, look, I had that exit from private business. I did a little better than I thought I would. I don't shop at Ethan Allen. That furniture's too expensive.
It is ridiculous. Again, it comes back to trust. And I love Reagan's, you know, the nine most dangerous words in the English language. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
I'm with the government and I'm here to help. How does this is such a open-ended, ambiguous question. How do leaders in D.C. regain the trust of the American citizens? Even with you brought up the ominous bill. In which there's so much bacon in there, as they say, so many hidden things. How do we make those bills that are proposed for, you know, you're talking $1 billion spending bills, how do you make those more transparent and cut out all the fat?
So actually, for the first time ever, in January of 2023, when McCarthy became speaker, if you remember, there was a long fight for speaker. He became speaker finally, and he introduced rules. And they adopted our rule on a 72-hour timeout to simply read the bill. So on the final version of legislation, at least give us 3 full days to read it, dissect it, the people, the pundits, the press, to go through that bill, read it, and actually see what's in it before you vote. It's probably a 99% issue with the American people. We ran that public policy campaign for 2 years ahead of that. 10 years ago, that specific campaign was run by good government groups on the left, and it ran up against so much bipartisan pushback, they actually gave up on it. And at OpenTheBooks.com, we thought, well, that's necessary legislation. This is a 99% issue with the American people. We're going to run this public policy campaign. We put it in the Wall Street Journal. I talked about it frequently on C-SPAN. I gave presentations on it to like the American Legislative Exchange Council, their annual conference. We put together a grassroots petition. We had tens of thousands of signatures on it. And McCarthy adopted it in the rules in January of 2023. When McCarthy was disposed as speaker, that rule went out the window. And now we just got last week, the omnibus spending bill is $1.7 trillion loaded with 6,500 earmarks, which are the currency of corruption in Congress.
This is the Washington DC sort of, or congressional playbook, is come up with a massive bill. I mean, Nancy Pelosi once said and she slipped of the tongue in an interview, said, well, you've got to pass it to find out what's in the bill.
Yeah. I think that was on the healthcare bill, the Obamacare bill back in the day, the Affordable Healthcare Act. So in the latest omnibus spending bill, you have Republicans cross-dressing as fiscal conservatives. Back in the district, they say they're fiscal conservative. They go to Washington, D.C. The number one earmark is U.S. The number one earmarker on this legislation is Lisa Murkowski, the U.S. Senator from Alaska. Here's just one of her earmarks. It's $4 million for a new sewer system in the city of Pelican, Alaska. We looked up the population of Pelican. It's less than 100 people. That means, Mike, you and I for every single resident in Pelican, we're spending $40,000 for their sewer system. Every dime of that is borrowed off against our national debt.
It's almost like it can't be fixed. I hate to play a defeatist attitude here, but I think people are so fed up. They're so tired of the system, they've almost given up.
Well, Lisa Murkowski's earmarked almost $400 million for Alaska. You've got Republican U.S. Senator Susan Collins. She's in Maine. Maine is the 42nd ranked state on population, but in this bill, they've soaked up the fifth most number of earmarks because Susan Collins is a vice chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee, and she's bringing home the bacon. A year ago, she put, you know, here's some of her earmarks. It was $2.5 million into a new police station in Caribou. That's where she grew up. They've got less than 15 sworn officers. She put $4 million into a brand new library in a town with less than 1,000 residents that had just shuttered their library a couple of years earlier. She put $3 million in the Irish Heritage Museum.
Term limits. Are you a fan of term limits to get some of these career politicians like a Joe Biden, who's been there for way too long? Are you in favor of limiting people on how long they can stay in these positions of power?
Yeah, I think the country's ready for it. At least at a bare minimum, they'd have to move around in their positions. Like if you're a member of Congress, you'd be forced to run for either governor back in your own state or for U.S. Senate. Yeah. You know, if there's term limits, there has to be new blood and fresh ideas being circulated. And I think that's the problem right now. We don't have new blood. We don't have fresh ideas. And so I think the term limits has merit.
What are some of, as we close out, what are some of the projects you've got up and coming that you're particularly proud of or passionate about right now?
So we are going to take every single one of the major public institutions of higher ed, colleges and universities. We're going to start with the top 10 as ranked by U.S. News and World Report. Then we're going to go to the top 25, and we're going to quantify how many employees are dedicated to this pernicious concept of diversity, equity, and inclusion. Mm. We're going to run the same study that we did at the University of Virginia across these top 10 and then top 25 institutions. I'm very excited about that. I am excited to roll out our audit of the United States Department of Defense. The American people need to know what's going on with their tax dollar at the agency that spends the most money. We're going to take a look at grant making. Grant making at the federal level nearly rivals the entire budget of the Department of Defense. And there's a lot of waste in that budget, as we've been talking about. We're going to do an entire payroll study of the United States federal government. Right now, there's a war on transparency. They're actually redacting the names of 350,000 in the rank and file alphabet soup agencies, not like the CIA or the clandestine services. I'm talking your regular agencies. They're redacting out of 1.4 million federal employees. They're knocking out and redacting the names, blanking them out on 350,000 names, 280,000 work locations. Mike, this is like Where's Waldo? You know, we don't know who by name is working where and what location. And then now we know that they're not even in the office. They're all still working from home. So, you know, these are some of the battles that we tackle at OpenTheBooks.com.
A delay tactic on their part. And I'm sure they use the guise of we want to protect people's personal information. But if you work in government, that should be open. It should be public.
100%.
Bottom line.
Like,
then guess what? Don't work for government. Go into the private sector.
100%.
Good.
Now, for instance, like in New York, in the city of New York, there's probably no more dangerous position than to be a New York City police officer. Mm. But we get all the information in the city of New York on those officers. So these federal agencies, these bureaucrats, we don't get to see them by name or where they work. I mean, come on, it's time to open the books.
Well, Adam, I got to commend you for taking up a noble and necessary fight, which nobody's, you know, done to this point. I'm sure there were small efforts towards what you've done, but I almost fear for you. I commend you. I fear for you because you're going to be on everyone's receiving end, who you put out into the public. But Guys, go visit openthebooks.com. I was shocked on the very homepage when I saw the University of Virginia information on DE&I and the fact that somebody's making $500,000 a year. I mean, they're becoming a multimillionaire given they spend their money correctly and they're saving within a matter of years running those programs. And it's just, that's disturbing. Adam, thank you for joining us and best of luck with what you're doing. And we're going to be following you. And thank you. All right, guys. This has been another episode of the Men's Journal Everyday Warrior podcast. Hope you enjoyed. See you next time.